This episode of Boat Briefing is sponsored by Amico & Co. Based in Genoa, at the heart of the Mediterranean, Amico & Co. is a family-owned refit yard with more than two centuries of maritime heritage behind it. Today, the yard is widely recognised for its work on large yachts, offering a full-service refit capability delivered largely through its own in-house teams, from paint and engineering to complex conversions and structural projects. Rooted in one of Europe's great historic port cities, Amico combines tradition, technical depth, and long-term thinking, making it a trusted partner for owners, captains, and shipyards alike. Hello, and welcome to Boat Briefing. I'm Holly Majerison, the online editor here at Boat International. On this week's episode, it spans two very different corners of the superyacht world. First, we'll be heading to the South Pacific, where we unpack a charter through French Polynesia, a destination that's as logistically complex as it is visually spectacular. Then, we'll shift gears and look at the bigger industry picture. It's been an unusually packed start to the year, so with the help of our data team, we've distilled the five stories that are already defining 2026. From 100-metre-plus milestones and flagship launches to hybrid propulsion and evolving fleet strategies. We'll then round things off with our brokerage picks of the week. So whether you're here for travel insight or market intelligence, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to Boat Briefing. My name is Holly Majerison, and here with me to navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Boat's travel and charter editor, Georgia.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Pleasure to be back.
Yeah, we love having you back.
I love doing this podcast, especially when there's a travel-related topic.
Well, it's very fitting, isn't it? And we've got a good bit of content ahead of us. So this week, we'll be delving into the world of travel, following a special trip to French Polynesia. So we'll be looking at how to navigate these waters, why to go, and what not to do. And then we'll also be looking into the latest news story and diving into everything in the world of yacht news, brokerage, and all the updates.
Let's do it. French Pole. I'm so pleased that this trip happened. I'm just so pleased that it happened. And it's nice because obviously both of us have been, but we've both had very different experiences. The main difference being that you were on a superyacht,
yeah,
and I wasn't. And obviously the islands are beautiful and there are lots of ways to do the islands. But when you're cruising around the islands, the only way to do that is by yacht, really.
Absolutely. I mean, I just have to say, it actually was the best trip I've ever been on. And I'm so grateful. So Georgia sent me on this trip actually back in October. And it was just... yeah, I can't stop talking about it. I haven't actually done my Instagram post yet. All my pictures are still in my archive. I think as soon as I post on the grid, it feels like it's official. The trip's over. It's obviously 6 months on from then.
So mentally, you're still there.
I'm mentally still there. Yeah,
it's a good way to be.
But I have just submitted my copy to you. And
On time,
would you believe? So... I think it's brought it all back to me, actually, and it feels like the right time to talk about it.
I'm so pleased. So whereabouts in French Polynesia were you actually cruising?
Okay, so we started in Tahiti and we boarded the 48-meter ocean-fast yacht Big Sky. So the trip was actually arranged, I should say a huge thank you to the superyacht people as well, who very kindly hosted me, and yeah, it was amazing. So we started in Tahiti and then we moved through Moorea. I'm probably going to butcher the name of these islands because they're all quite hard to say and the spelling's quite weird. So bear with me. But we started in Tahiti, moved through Moorea, and then went to Huaheine, Raiatea, Taha, and then finally Bora Bora. So this is actually a group of islands called the Society Islands. I think it's actually made up of about 115 islands and atolls. But yeah, each island had a completely different vibe. So Moorea was quite dramatic and theatrical. Huaheine was quite calm and traditional, I'd say. Raiatea and Taha were definitely more of the spiritual places and very deeply connected to nature. Whereas Bora Bora is that place that you kind of associate, I suppose, with French Pole. It's very postcard perfect picture perfect, beautiful water. Yeah.
So when you picture it now, what's the first image that comes to your head?
Well, it's quite a strange image in a way, because it's not, I think people automatically associate French Paul with Bora Bora, as I was saying. But actually, to me, I imagine Moorea. It was quite a dramatic landscape. So the way that I picture it is that it's rising out of the mist. It's got those volcanic peaks, the jungle, which is kind of falling into those turquoise lagoons. It's raw, it's dramatic, and kind of overwhelming in scale, to be honest. And I think it's that landscape that just really sticks out to me, because it just reminds you how small you are in the middle of the Pacific.
Yeah. And that's the one that's opposite Tahiti, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
I've actually been there, but again, this is where our trips differ hugely. There is a ferry across from Tahiti to Moorea. And if you miss that ferry, there is literally no way of getting back. So what we had to do, we did miss that ferry, life. And we ended up getting a 6-meter Boston Whaler back over that ship. Really choppy channel. Took 3.5 hours. No lights in the middle of the night. It was terrifying. It was awful. But yeah, I'm sure you didn't have that on your...
No, I mean, I was just about to say that's actually the first leg of the journey. And I actually did feel quite seasick.
Oh, poor you. That's so sad.
I instantly thought, as I said, sorry. That I probably shouldn't mention it.
Yeah, really. Oh, Molly.
Sorry, really just to rub salt in the wound there. Mm. But yeah, I mean, as the captain said, that's the choppiest bit. And if you can get past that, then you'll be fine for the rest of the trip. But yeah, slightly different experience doing it on a 48-meter yacht versus a 6-meter.
No lights. No, not so fun. And we were with this celestial navigation specialist who just kept on pointing out the stars. And it just made it take longer. We were like, can you just get us back now?
I don't actually want the full tour here.
I don't want to look at this right now.
A to B.
No, alive.
Yeah. But it's actually very in theme with all their, with the history and the culture that's there.
Would have been nice to see it on a yacht though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I was just about to say, we still got that experience. But oh, in good.
It's probably the same guy.
You might have just, yeah, come on, yeah. Boy, and told us.
But it was very beautiful though, the stars over there. Very, very beautiful. Mm. And talk to me about getting there, because obviously that's a big thing.
Yeah, so obviously it's not the easiest destination. You usually fly through Los Angeles or Paris to Tahiti, and then obviously you board the yacht. But I think, you know, it's a really long journey. It's like 22 hours. But
so long.
So long. I did actually take one of your travel hacks.
Did you?
On board. I asked Georgia for her top tips. And I don't think I've actually told you this yet, but you told me to order a foot hammock off.
I did.
Yeah.
And did it work?
Yeah, it did. Didn't get its full use because I basically went in really prepared. I was like, this is 22 hours on a plane. Mm. So I bought this foot hammock. I bought loads of nice snacks from the airport. And then as I got to the gate, this never happens to me, by the way, I got upgraded, which was just the dream.
Oh my God.
The perfect trip to get upgraded on when it's that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But obviously that meant that I was then way too mortified to get out my Itsu sushi and the foot hammock.
Oh no.
Yeah, I thought that's not very premium really, is it? So
no, I think that's even more premium.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure how it would have gone down. And I was also, it was very nice being upgraded. I was on one of those like 4-seater, you know, in the middle of the plane.
Oh, right.
I was a bit
right.
Trapped in. And yeah. I thought,
oh, were you in the middle of
that? I was
that?
In the middle.
Oh, that's good.
We can't complain.
No,
I got upgraded.
No, fair. So does it feel like a once in a lifetime trip or something that you would return to?
Well, I keep saying that it was the trip of a lifetime, but hopefully it's not a once in a lifetime place.
No.
I'd love to go back. And I think that the region really lends itself to repeat visits. I think, you know, just in terms of the pace of life there, the culture, the islands themselves are all so different. And I think they kind of shift depending on how intentional you are and what you're doing on each of the islands. Mm. So no matter how many times you go back, I think you'd have a very different experience.
Yeah.
To me, I've been trying to explain to people the vibe of the trip, and I don't think it would appeal to everyone. I think it appeals to somebody that wants a bit of cultural immersion, I would say. It's immersive in a way that doesn't feel like a typical luxury destination. So there's always more to discover. And it's, to me, it's all about learning from the locals as well. They're so happy.
Yeah.
They're just such lovely people, always smiling. It's that proper barefoot island life.
Yeah.
And just so joyful. I just felt so uplifted.
That's so lovely.
Being around them. Mm. So yeah, I think if I was to go back, I'd perhaps do different islands as well. Mm. I've heard the Tuamotu islands. A lot of people were talking about those. Other people on the trip had been. I think it's meant to be really good for diving. So maybe that, although I'm not actually a big diving fan. But I also think there's just a lot of hikes to do.
Yeah.
So I think that would appeal.
Amazing.
So I'm interested, obviously, your trip to French Pole was perhaps not the best, Georgia. But how do you think that it ranks to compared to somewhere like Antarctica, Galapagos or Madagascar?
So my trip was obviously very different, but it's still an amazing place. Like, it's so beautiful. The beaches are incredible. There's this incredible sense of freedom that you get there, which I feel like is different, especially with Antarctica and the Galapagos, because obviously everything's very restricted there.
True.
So when you go to Antarctica, as many people know, obviously nothing can happen on the ice. You can go onto the ice, but you can't spend time there. And it's you've got to be very careful about how, you know, you are there. It's not really the place that you go, obviously, because it's so cold. Mm. It's not really the place you go and sort of like hang out on the boat, you know?
Yeah.
But obviously it's so incredible and awe-inspiring and breathtaking and beautiful. And I just loved that trip so much for very different reasons. I feel like in French Polynesia, you could literally go and see these beautiful islands, spend some time on the boat, and it's so different. And the same in the Galapagos, it's such an amazing place to go to, and that will always be such a special place for me for many reasons. Again, it's very restricted, so you can't necessarily spend too much time on land, or you've got to be careful about the things that you experience there. The wildlife is very different, and Madagascar again, it's very different. You do get more of a sort of wild side in Madagascar, and it's very wildlife heavy, and then lemurs, and it's beautiful. And
would you say that those are places that you fully, you know, perhaps because they're more protected, are they places that you can immerse yourself in?
Yeah, I would say that when you're in Antarctica, obviously there's nothing other than being immersed in that place. Mm. You've got whales everywhere, you've got penguins everywhere, you've got these huge icebergs, the weather is so dramatic and amazing, and everything's so huge. There's nothing like that in the world. It's so different. I think French Polynesia is so special for the other reason, which is like it's so relaxing, it's so beautiful. You can kind of, you know, you can either do this beautiful cultural immersion as you speak about, or you can hang out on Big Cora.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And, you know, swim in these beautiful waters and beautiful cocktails, and like there's so much there.
Yeah.
It is difficult to describe. I've obviously, I've had a combination of trips there in French Polynesia, you know, which have been some of the best trips of my life. Going to the Brando or spending time on the beach, or, you know, days swimming with sharks, you know, it's just amazing.
Amazing, yeah.
And everything obviously gives you something a bit different.
Definitely.
But yeah, very, very different experiences.
I think that's what I was trying to convey in my article, which you'll be able to read in the mag in the next few months. But I think, you know, that's actually kind of my closing line of the article. And I suppose my conclusion from it, that French Pole, when you're cruising by yacht, it doesn't really ask you what you want. It instead kind of asks you who you are when you kind of slow down enough to listen. It's about taking it in a very different way to anywhere else that I've traveled.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's very nice because it's sometimes you worry, are you culturally appropriating different places? The vibe that I got from all the locals there were that they were really welcoming and wanted to
share their culture. Yeah, it was so beautiful.
So that was really lovely.
Yeah. So talk to me a little about the yacht. What was it? How big was it? Who was on board?
Yep. So we were on, as I said, Big Sky, which is a 48 meter super yacht. So I'd say it was, you know, small enough to feel intimate, but then spacious for everything that we did. And we did a hell of a lot. So it was a really lovely group of charter brokers. And as I said, it was Cam Bray from the super yacht people that organized the trip.
Shout out to Cam.
Shout out Cam. Absolute legend.
You are fab.
We did many karaoke sessions.
Oh, so very important.
Very important. So he was a great host for the trip, made sure that everyone was, you know, doing activities that they wanted to do. And also, I just think getting that balance right between being comfortable on board mm-hmm. and then also, you know, planning these amazing trips and excursions on land as well. So I should also give a shout out to Hallie, who also works with the super yacht people, which was quite funny. I didn't know her before the trip, but then I feel like we were the ultimate iconic duo by the end. It was Hallie and Holly, Hals and Halls. And yeah, it was lovely. I should also shout out the crew, who were just absolutely incredible. We had Captain Brett, who was just a fountain of knowledge on the region, which I think, and he's really built up this rapport with all the locals to, you know, create these amazing itineraries. And then, you know, obviously I have to mention the chef and the canapes and things like, you know, the grilled cheese toasties just created a really nice, relaxed atmosphere on board. We had a movie night, watched Moana. And
oh, that is so nice.
Which is about the place, you know, the locals are saying that the film Moana is so accurate to French Pole, which was great. But yeah, the chef made some cheese toasties, which were really nice. And we all just sat in our dressing gowns and watched that. So that was lovely. And then the chief stew, Chi-Chi, had her cocktail of the day every day. So we'd go on these excursions and then arrive back and she'd have a different cocktail of the day each day.
Do you remember your favorite one?
Well, mine is always, I'm probably quite boring.
Gin and tonic.
It's not far off. A Hugo Spritz. They made a very good Hugo Spritz.
Nice.
Yeah. Which I think I'd put on the preference sheet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, well, I'll mix up my usual Aperol Spritz.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was very nice. She made a very good cocktail.
That's so lovely.
And then, you know, the boys and their water toys, as I keep saying, you know, they were great in terms of setting up the jet skis. The electric surfboards, got to say, they were so patient with me because I assume you've done the electric surfboards.
Yeah, but I don't like to admit I have because I'm so bad.
They're so hard.
I mean, you see someone else do it, you're like, easy.
Must be a breeze. I couldn't even stand. So, you know, you have to get to the point where you're kneeling on it and then standing. I couldn't even get to the kneel. Yeah.
Maybe I was too many Hugo Spritz.
Too many. Yeah, I think that could have been part of it. But yeah, the crew were amazing. And, you know, the yacht itself had everything that you needed for comfort. But then I'd say it also, you know, it really blended into the experience rather than standing out, which I think is really important in an environment like that.
Yeah.
It just lends itself really nicely to the region.
Amazing. So what do you think? I know it's difficult to say, but what do you think was your favourite moment looking
back? Oh, it's so hard because there were lovely moments. You know, we did have a karaoke night on board, which was really nice and just really great fun. Mm. But obviously...
Do you want to give us a bit of a rendition now?
I think I'll save that, actually. Okay. Everybody's shooting at a Christmas party. I don't think they need to hear that again. No, but, you know, in terms of all the excursions were amazing, but on the first day, we'd literally, you know, just done that crossing from Tahiti to Moorea. Mm. And then we then had lunch and then it was like straight on to another tender with an expert in the region called Dr. Poole. And he took us and we went swimming with humpback whales.
Wow.
And
how amazing.
Oh, it was honestly unforgettable. You had to be really patient and really still. And Dr. Poole also gave us a very thorough warning, which actually scared the living shit out of me.
What was it?
About when we were putting all our flippers and...
You'll get there.
Oh, why can I not remember? I'm like gesturing to Georgia. I can't remember what the bloody called. But yeah, all the flippers and goggles and everything. But he was like, it's really important that none of you make a splash as you get into the sea, because as soon as you make a splash, you know, he was like, we're in open water here. There are sharks.
Oh.
And
Oh my God.
Yeah. I was really quite terrified, actually.
That's horrifying.
And he was like, there's everything in this sea. And we were all just looking at each other like,
why are we doing this then?
But anyway, obviously, once you kind of get that out of your head and you get into the water very, very carefully without making a splash, you then go in groups and there's a lot of regulations around it, actually. It's kind of like a queuing system and only so many people can kind of go over and swim near, snorkel near the whales. But anyway, we did actually saw a mama and her half.
Wow.
And he was giving us lots of information about the humpback whales, but the mama was actually resting and then the calf kept coming up to breach. So you did have to wait quite a long time to be able to see something. But when the calf did then emerge, it was just amazing. And somebody on our excursion got a very good video. So it was quite hard to actually see it through my goggles.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to also navigate like treading water in the sea, and there's a bit of a current there. So it's quite overstimulating. Wow. But also then when you just do manage to kind of calm down a bit and take it in, it's
what
just breathtaking. Yeah.
Cool. That sounds amazing.
Oh, it was. There's so many. I mean, I need to go through my camera roll and just
That Instagram up.
I do.
Yeah. I need to come back to reality.
I know. I think it's still there. That's why I can't get my words out this week. Just like living in La La Land still.
Oh, I'm so pleased that it happened and that we could make it work.
Well, I'm so grateful. So yeah, big thank you, Georgia, and big thank you to the super yacht people and all the crew on board.
So news.
Yeah, news. So moving along to a bit of a different topic, I realised that this year we've actually not done many data-led sections. So I was then yesterday trying to think like which news stories are we going to shout out when we haven't covered many this year. So I actually asked our data guy, our boat pro expert, Raf, to help me whittle down this year's top stories to 5. I actually have this job each week with Editor's Choice newsletter, which you should sign up to if you're not already signed up to. But I have to choose 5 high priority stories from the week. So I try and do a bit of a mix of news, brokerage, some long reads. So I have that battle each week. But when I asked Raf for 5 from this year so far, he was like, don't be so ridiculous. Like, that's impossible. And, you know, we're only in February, but it's just been a packed start to the year. So the selection that I've chosen covers some massive new builds, strategic refits, record-breaking flagships, and hybrid innovation. So let's go through them.
Should we dive in?
Dive in.
So the first story is Lursen's 109-meter O3, which was spotted on sea trials. Formerly Project Shackleton, the boat finally hit the water, and construction for this started in 2018, and delivery is expected in Q1 of 2026. So anytime now, really. And she is one of the largest yachts in the world.
Yeah, pretty impressive, actually.
Yeah. built for exploration, she has an ice-class hull, cargo capacity, heli hangar, diesel electric propulsion, and over 6,000 gross tonnage of volume. Her exterior is by Salt Ship Design with that signature grey axe bow. And it shows that the 100-meter market remains strong. Lursen currently has 10 yachts over 100 meters in build, which is obviously a hell of a lot.
According to Boat Pro.
According to Boat Pro.
Yeah, that's a strong story to kick us off. Okay, so for the next story, I was thinking about covering Ocean Co. relaunching the 93-meter... Oh, I don't know how to say it.
Drac.
Drac?
Yeah.
Is it Drac? Okay.
Drac.
Double A.
Yeah.
As a support yacht for the 111-meter Leviathan, which is obviously owned by Gabe Newell. So the rebuild included a dive center, tender deck, retractable cranes, and flexible guest and crew accommodation. So exterior modifications were by Ocean Co's in-house team, interiors by Vedda, and naval architecture by Azure Yacht Design and Naval Architecture. So yeah, I'd say it's a masterclass in fleet strategy. So the main yacht handles the lifestyle and the support yacht handles operational muscle.
So cool. So really, really cool. I have some news from Abeking and Rasmussen. They have confirmed a new 100-meter yacht. Quietly, it says here. They've quietly confirmed. The details are secret, but it will exceed 4,500 gross tons with a steel hull and aluminium superstructure. Delivery for this is expected in 2030. There have been no renders, no designers announced, but the signal is clear. The ultra top end market is still strong, even in long term builds. Yeah.
I think there's something, because it's so secretive, sometimes it just makes it all the more, you know, the lack of information actually means it'll be all the more exciting. Definitely. So now a geographic shift. I'm actually turning to Turkey and Turquoise Yachts, who have launched its 87.7 meter flagship, Bento, which is actually the largest by volume ever built in Turkey.
Cool.
So exterior and interior is by H2 Yacht Design. It's pretty lifestyle focused. It's got two jacuzzis, a huge beach club with a drive-in tender dock, as well as a spa, gym, helipad and basketball court, a sun deck with teppanyaki, a cinema and a bar. And guest accommodation is for 12, while there is space for a crew of 27. So yeah, pretty impressive.
It's really nice, this. Mm. I was just typing there because I want to confirm the colour. I think it's this really cool deep blue, but it's taken from one of the classic Ferrari blues, which I think is really cool.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it's one of the like classic, I can't remember which Ferrari it was, but it's one of their classic colours. So it's a really beautiful colour, which I always think is lovely. I always think when yachts do that colour, like Madame Gu or something, like something that's really striking like this, this is obviously not that same kind of teal blue. It's this deep, beautiful. It's lovely.
It's like gorgeous, it. Yeah. And a great feat for Turkey as well.
Yeah, definitely. And then finally, Benetti double launch, the B-Now 67 meter hybrid yachts. They launched Symmetry and Dagger, which are two 67 meter yachts with hybrid propulsion. The hybrid tech reduces noise, vibration, environmental impact while offering flexible cruising. The exteriors for both, is it for both?
Yeah, I think so. For Symmetry. No.
Okay, so the exteriors for Symmetry were by RWD, with interiors by Raymond Langton Design. And so Dagger then was designed by Sino Yacht Design. Then they have an Oasis deck, infinity pools, open plan entertaining, but personalized interiors from Ice Effect chandeliers? I think that's French, actually. chandeliers. Private art galleries. Obviously, the hybrid propulsion for these is a big bonus. And it is the next wave for semi-custom 60 to 70 meter yachts. The new wave. The new wave. Yeah. So it's exciting stuff.
Definitely. So in summary, Northern Europe is flexing the 100 meter plus market. Turkey is moving up in volume and lifestyle focused builds. And Italy is pushing hybrid tech and owner personalized interiors.
Cool.
And if you want even more insight, as I mentioned, our Editor's Choice newsletter digs into all the data and top stories every week. It's curated by me and I really try and prioritize the top picks for the week.
Amazing. So finally, we have the brokerage picks, but I've just seen on this, Holly's actually decided not to pick.
I have a brokerage.
So I'm going to go with my pick.
Yeah, please.
And that is the winner. So recently, Lady Beatrice, the beautiful 60 meter Fedship, came onto the market. Really lovely interiors by John Benenberg. She had a recent refit. The boat is like your classic Fedship, but... and weirdly, my dad texted me about this the other day when it came on. He was like, do you have any information on this boat? Because this was the boat that was central to the high stakes dispute between the billionaire twin brothers, Sir Frederick and Sir David Barclay, which was obviously very prominent. She then became a pawn in a divorce settlement and a big financial battle. I don't know if we're allowed to say this, but we'll check it before it goes out, because I don't know about my sources for this.
I didn't actually see that in the notes there, and I'm not
I don't know.
My legal radar is
check with the Wyco who's listening if this is the case. I'm very sorry, Wyco, but it's not gossip. It happened, and it's currently listed for sale for $28 million, and it's beautiful. It's a beautiful boat. This is everything with these brokerage picks, which you have chosen not to do. You've made a stand against not choosing, which I respect. But I think the classics are always so, they present such an amazing opportunity with, you know, I think it really is cool. And it's had a refit, so she stands in really amazing condition. And I think the sun deck is beautiful. It's got this like lovely curved sun deck and this big jacuzzi, as those of outside space, and things inside are really bright, and there's those of beautiful art, which I don't know, I assume that comes as part of the deal. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's the same as housing, but presumably it's seen as that. But it's really lovely, and I think it's also just really cool if you want to have a look. It's just really cool to be able to see this yacht, because obviously it has allegedly been involved in such controversy. Allegedly, I'm sorry. Jess Weiger, I'm so sorry. I hope that we can see this because it's cool. But I'm sure that if you Google it, you can find more about the yacht and the controversy surrounding it.
Good pick. Thank you. I hadn't planned one, but I have just thought of something that definitely needs a mention. So the 114-meter Lloyd Werft superyacht Luna, one of the world's most expensive superyachts, I think it was actually at the start of February, but that had a massive 70 mil price drop.
70 million?
When I first, somebody sent
it in. Are you sure?
Yeah. Somebody sent it in for checking. And I was like, oh, they've accidentally added the zero on there. I was like, that is insane. So I have checked with Raf, our boat pro data guy. And he thinks that is, like, as you would expect, the biggest price drop to have ever happened. So it's pretty major. And if you think about it, that's like, I'm actually not good at maths, but I think that's like a third of her asking price.
Luna.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Pretty big.
Who's listening to us at Eastwind?
Eastwind Yachts, yeah. So she actually only joined the market in June last year.
And so what's the current price?
The current price is 200 mil now after that ask.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a bargain, is it?
It's not a bargain, no. But it is a pretty iconic yacht.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You know, the pool is, I think, what most people know her by, that huge aft deck.
Yeah.
And
cool boat. Yeah. Really, really cool boat.
So if anybody has a spare 200 mil, then
get
involved.
Cool boat.
Good pick. Thank you. That was quite impromptu as well from me.
Yeah.
So there we go.
Cool.
Well, that is all we have time for today. We've rattled through, given a very brief overview, I'd say, of French Pull, but more of that to come in the future. All the topics that we've discussed today, I'll drop links below so that you can read more on those. But for now, Georgia, I hope to see you in the next few weeks back on the pod.
Yes.
I love it.
It's great.
Well, we love having you. So yeah, that's it. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And that's it for this week's episode of Boat Briefing, which was a production of Boat International Media and sponsored by Amico & Co. If you'd like even more insight into the story shaping the superyacht world, don't forget to sign up to our Editor's Choice newsletter, which goes out every Sunday. Every week, I distill the five stories that really matter across new builds, brokerage, business, and long reads. And trust me, narrowing it down is no easy task. As always, you can find all of the stories we discussed today in the description below, or on our website, boatinternational.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time on Boat Briefing.